Metaphysics. It's a noun, the definition of which is the branch of philosophy that deals with the first principles of things, including abstract concepts such as being, knowing, substance, cause, identity, time, and space. That's the definition of the word metaphysics. But then there's also this definition, the abstract theory with no basis in reality. Both are from the dictionary, you can look them up. But there's another way of defining metaphysics, a way that millions of people around the world prefer to define it, a way of life. Enter the skeptic metaphysician. My name is Will, and I, like Mulder from The X-Files, want to believe. So I've embarked on a journey of discovery. I've talked to people deeply entrenched in the spiritual world. I've thrown myself into weird and wonderful experiences. I've even joined a coven of witches, all in the interest of finding something, anything, that will prove that there's something beyond this physical three-dimensional world we all live in. In modern philosophical terminology, metaphysics refers to the studies of what cannot be reached through objective studies of material reality. And this so interests me, like a lot. Now, I'm not talking about the actual scientific study of things, not material. I'm talking about the more esoteric studies, things like reincarnation, ESP, astral projection, energy healing, clairvoyance, shamanism, spell casting, spirit channeling, astrology, numerology. Well, you get the point. We'll be diving into stuff that is so far from the generally accepted school of thought that I fully expect my mind to be blown. At least that's my hope. To be fully transparent, it's taken me a long time to find a single thing that has given me physical, tangible proof that there's something beyond this world. As hard and as far as I've searched, there's not much out there that's made me a believer. So fingers crossed that someone out there will be able to prove once and for all that this stuff actually exists. So if this kind of thing interests you or intrigues you in any way, I hope you'll join me as I continue in my search. I'm not going to be all mumbo-jumbo about this stuff, but rather really dive into this stuff and see what can come out of it. All, of course, with the utmost respect of those sharing their stories with us. This is The Skeptic Metaphysician.
Previously on The Skeptic Metaphysician. Sorry, I've always wanted to say that. Thank you for joining us again on this episode of The Skeptic Metaphysician. As always, you've already heard, I've welcomed my friend Karen Ensley back to the show to talk about, to set the interview that I'm about to share with all of you. And the reason why I said previously, why I started that off in a childhood fantasy sort of way is
because...
cheesy way, is because this is the second part of a two-part interview about the topic we're about to discuss. And before we get into exactly what it is, if you've not listened to the episode previous to this one, I would strongly recommend you do that because we pick up right where we left off on the last interview with my friend Bess. Karen, do you remember what the last interview was about?
Yes, sleep paralysis.
Sleep paralysis. And then the great vibration event that happened to her, where her the energy inside of her body, her kundalini, was rushing up and down her body, and it caused these vibrations that anyone could feel. But also this feeling of euphoria. It was she was in a constant state of euphoria, which sounds amazing. And she says is amazing, but it was leading up to something. And it was leading up to out-of-body experiences, astral projection. And this is what this interview that we're about to share with you today is all about, is expanding our conversation from last week into this week about how she actually left her body.
So it really makes that whole kind of scary sleep paralysis thing sound kind of cool. If it's like a step.
Right. As long as you know that it's coming.
Right.
Because as when you first start experiencing these things, you rush into an absolute panic because you can't physically move. You're sitting, lying in bed.
And there's a creepy guy on your chest.
wide awake. Your mind's wide awake, but you can't physically move. And yes, to your point, there are people who believe that there's someone sitting on your chest, whether it's a person or a demon or something, but that's the feeling that you get.
See, now I wonder if they kind of go to demon because they're afraid and they can't move, so they think it's got to be a negative thing. So maybe it's not. Maybe that's just their interpretation because they're in this really uncomfortable, scary situation. So that, they're just assuming it's bad.
That makes a lot of sense to me, Karen, especially when you look at the visual representations that you see. They're all old timey, back in the 1800s or 1700s or even 1400s when these drawings were being done. It was back in the day when everyone turned to demons and things like that to explain the unexplainable.
Right.
So that does make a lot of sense to me. So to recap, if you don't want to listen to the last show, well, shame on you. But I know we all lead very busy lives, so I completely understand why some people may not be able to do that.
Sure.
So in order to recap it, right, my friend Bess started waking up, not being able to move, being completely wide awake, aware of her surroundings, knowing exactly what was happening, where she was, what she was doing, but unable physically to move. And this happened to her several times, which then prompted her to go to Google to find out what was happening. And she thought maybe she had things happening to her. Which led her to Google to try to figure out what was happening to her. Why was she not able to move? But then very quickly thereafter, she started feeling these vibrations going up around her neck. And she was Googling that because then she suddenly was starting to become afraid of maybe she had multiple sclerosis or all these different types of explanations, all scientifically based because she is so pragmatic. She thought there was no way that this couldn't be explained scientifically or medically. So that's what she endeavored to do.
So, and I do want to say for all the people listening, if you know anybody that suffers from sleep paralysis, send this podcast to them because they need to know it's not a creepy man sitting on their chest.
Yeah, it's good to know that.
That could be very frightening, you know, that maybe it's a person. And even if they don't, if they're not interested in astral projection, you know, maybe they can understand it's just an energy and it's not something negative.
Right. Yeah. And then along with these vibrations, that's a really good point, Karen. Thanks for making it for sure. If you know someone that would benefit from listening to these conversations, please share the show with them because it could be of you could be really saving someone's mental health. Right. So along with these vibrations, she was also feeling this constant feeling of euphoria. In fact, she was talking about feeling euphoric as we were having a dialogue, as we were having our conversation. That, though it sounds amazing, I can't imagine it not being exhausting.
No, it's energizing.
Sure.
I mean, when you're happy and excited, you just get more energy.
But being going through life 100% of the time completely happy and euphoric
sounds wonderful.
Okay. Maybe I'm too pessimistic to feel that way. Maybe it would be different if I was feeling it. But for me,
Maybe the exhaustion is just lack of euphoria.
Well, now you're starting to make me think.
That's how I roll, baby.
Maybe I need to dial into this euphoria, this sleep paralysis thing, and see if it works for me. Now, granted, everyone wants to feel euphoria. So, yes, I'm tempted to find out what it's about. But full disclosure, as we continued in our conversation, I've been dying to astral project since my early 20s. I've been wanting to experience that because as we talk about on the show all the time, I'm actively looking for that physical confirmation that this stuff actually exists. And astral projection, right? Leaving your body and going and being able to verify certain things just seems like the right answer.
Well, maybe it's your skepticism that's blocking you because it sounds like Beth wasn't necessarily a skeptic. I don't even think she thought about it.
She
and
didn't.
It just happened to her.
That's a very great.
But you might be blocking it.
Great point. And that's exactly what we talk about during the interview. The fact that maybe I'm just, well, two things. One, I'm a skeptic, but also I want it so badly that I'm blocking it because I want it too much. She had no interest, had no idea about astral projection or sleep paralysis. And because of that, it just became very natural to her to transition into it. So because I wanted it so much, it couldn't happen. We talked during the interview about the CIA's Gateway Project. Have you heard about that?
What? No.
Right. So the Gateway Project was a project that the CIA launched in response to the USSR at the time doing experiments with remote viewing. Have you heard the term remote viewing?
No.
So remote viewing, basically, in a nutshell, is astral projection, but it's actually going and visiting the enemy and getting intel and bringing it back, even though you're still physically in a room thousands of miles away.
See, now that, so now I'm going to be skeptical because if this isn't true, they could just be, without realizing, making stuff up.
Well, that was the whole point of the experiments, was to try to verify. They would sit in a room and they would focus and they would go to their grandmother's house and say, what is your grandmother wearing at this point in time? Oh, she's wearing a blue dress. And come back, okay, grandma, you're wearing a blue dress? No, I'm wearing gray. Okay, you didn't work, right? Things like that. So
gotcha.
The trust but verify, that's what they were doing. So the CIA heard about the Russians or the Soviet Union doing these experiments and launched their own, because no way are the Ruskies going to be able to beat us to this, right? Mm-hmm. We want this technology if it exists.
See, there's the rub, technology.
Well,
it's not technology, is it?
Scientifically speaking, everything is technology, whether it's organic or inorganic is a different thing, right? But in their mind, if this was true, right, just as much as the CIA actually did experiments on extrasensory perception and telekinesis, they were exploring all these mind things because, hey, what if it's real? Mm-hmm. They want to be the ones to leverage it and make it be
useful
to them in their war efforts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
are you putting down which episode you need to? You're just trying to remember.
So the interview is fascinating because then I learned about the Monroe Institute, which is an institute in Virginia that mm-hmm. trains people how to leave their bodies. And it's based on Robert Monroe, who wrote the book Journeys Out of the Body and his whole experiences. I'd never heard of the Monroe Institute until this interview. And since I live in Virginia, I'm dying to go.
I wonder what their success rate is.
I asked that question and she didn't know. But I'm trying to reach out to the Monroe Institute to see if we can get someone from their institute on the show to talk to us about that. Because if they're 100% successful, I'm in.
Me too.
Right? I mean, who doesn't want to fly?
Oh my gosh. Right?
And she does talk about specifically her experiences with leaving her body, astral projection. She had two very specific instances and she goes into them in detail for us.
Were they good? Can she control where she goes?
She was controlling. She acted the first time. I so want to tell you what it is, but you got to listen to the interview. She controlled it, but not the end. Right, she was controlling her movements, or maybe not quite controlling. It's sort of like lucid dreams where you kind of sort of control but not really control. This was what it was like. She left her body and she went somewhere, and then once she realized, holy smokes, I'm out of my body, she bounced back into her body. So she's not had experiences since then because she's had some health challenges that she's been on some medications that she feels maybe are kind of limiting that ability to pierce the veil, so to speak. But but she doesn't go into detail. I'm super, super stoked.
Yeah, I want to hear about it.
Okay. Well, then let's just not waste any more time. Karen, once again, thank you so much for being on the show. And without further ado, here is the second part of my interview with Bess about now astral projection. Can you confirm that you have traveled outside of your body?
I can confirm that I've had two experiences that were purposeful, where I experienced myself outside my body. Yes. They were not real long. Nothing earth-shattering. I didn't see the face of God or travel to another dimension yet. In my attempts over the years, I've had two episodes where I was successful, where I reached those really buzzing vibrations. And I could reach those pretty regularly, but this whole lifting yourself out of your body was very challenging for me. And I mean, there are whole discussions on Reddit. There's all these how-to books on how to do it. So this is not something unique to me that, you know, I'm just trying. There are a lot of people that claim, and I believe a lot of them, to have done this, and some on a very regular basis. So for me, I reached the internal vibrations, the really loud buzzing ones where it really feels like the surf is pounding down on my body. And I thought, okay, this is it. I mean, I'm thinking to myself as I'm feeling the vibrations roll up and down my body, I started thinking, okay, this is it. I'm supposed to lift myself up. I'm supposed to just sit up. Well, I didn't just sit up. Instead, I almost felt like I was whipping myself out of my body, like if I was going to be a gymnast doing one of these giant, you know, kind of body waves. And somehow that ended up with me standing right beside the bed.
So you jettisoned yourself out of your body.
Yeah, kind of rocked or rolled myself out of the body. And I'm standing beside the bed and I'm thinking, oh my God, what do I do now? And I kind of freaked out. So I walked out of the room into the living room where our Great Dane was sleeping on the couch. And I was so excited. And I went over and sat down. And of course, the dog had no idea I was there. To which my mother said, well, it's funny he didn't sense you there. And I'm like, why would you think a dog would be able to sense a so, yeah, an astral projection? So anyway, but that is as far as I got before suddenly I was snapped back into my body, eyes snapping open, wide awake, with my heart going a zillion miles an hour.
Okay, so I've got to ask.
Yep.
Could this have been just a very lucid, vivid dream?
You know, it could have if I had been a little more drowsy when I went into the whole vibrational experience. But I wasn't. I was still very awake when I was meditating and going into the vibrations.
So when you were sitting next to the dog, you mm-hmm. were you had your full capacities. You were bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, thinking rationally.
Yep.
This wasn't any kind of ethereal. This was real. You are 100% sure it was real.
100% sure. Absolutely. And then the second time, I didn't exit my body quite the same way. Instead, as I went to kind of roll myself out, I floated up. Instead of standing right next to my body, I was then kind of flying in the air, for lack of a better word. So I kind of zoomed out of my room and into our living room where we have this huge picture window. And I went zooming towards the picture window and suddenly went, oh God, stop. Because I didn't want to run into I don't know why, but I wasn't thinking very rationally. I was thinking, oh, I can't hit the picture window. And as soon as I pulled myself up, I ended up back in the room wide awake with eyes open, heart pounding a million miles an hour. So those were my two experiences. There are people that claim to have had, you know, far more regular, far more fabulous encounters than what I had. But for me, those two were, you know, they were absolutely real enough for me to know it's true.
Well, if it wasn't those stories, those wild and woolly stories are great, but Bess, I know you, right? So to get this kind of story to come from someone like you who has spent the entire podcast explaining away or trying to find scientific means of explaining some of the things that you've experienced, to say to me on the other side of a microphone, this was 100% real.
Yeah.
That's an astounding thing for me because of who I know you to be. So,
well, you know, now you understand why. So I've really only ever talked about this with my son, my grown son, who is so sweet and says, oh, that sounds cool. And just kind of ignores me the rest of the time. Right. And then with my husband and with my mom. And they both are very sympathetic. They both, you know, sit there and listen to me talk. I didn't think either one of them could truly identify with what I was talking about because they've never had that experience. I mean, it sounds crazy. Thus, they cautioned me, you know, talk to us all you want, but don't tell this to anybody else because they're going to think you're crazy.
The little white men are coming to take you away. Well,
yeah.
I don't think you're crazy. I don't think listeners will think you're crazy. I personally think that a lot of folks that are listening to this are going to think, wow, isn't she unbelievably lucky? Because
I would say lucky is a good word.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's not special. And it's not, you know, I mean, I don't know anything more than you, or, you know, like I said, I don't think I'm awakened. I'm not enlightened anyway, other than the fact that I do know this is real.
Right.
Now, that's the only thing I know.
There's something else that we didn't talk about, is the fact that you walk around everyday life kind of in a dreamy kind of disconnected type of existence, is what you kind of, you talked about it in the document, right?
Well, that kind of goes to my butterflies and that blissful state that I have all the time. It constantly reminds me that I've had those experiences, that so I'm still to this day researching neuroscience, all the science, all the quantum physics. You nailed it with quantum physics. I think that is the key to all of this. So, I mean, it just reminds me to, I mean, it's constantly on my mind. It is constantly on my mind.
All right. Now, we talked a little bit about your mom. And maybe this is not, maybe I'll have to edit this part out, but.
This is the perfect time to bring this up.
Okay. All right. So, from what you wrote me, it seems that there might be something within a family lineage.
And that occurred to me. Yeah, yeah. So as I said, my mom and my mom and husband said, you know, talk to us all you want. But, you know, I thought neither one could really relate to what I was talking about. But then, Will, I couldn't believe it. My mother, casually in passing one day, was talking about, well, you know, I had an out-of-body experience, and I didn't think of it as anything spiritual. And my jaw hit the floor.
I can only imagine.
I said, what do you mean you've had an out-of-body experience? Now, this woman, she's 81 years old. I grew up with her. She has lived with us for years. I mean, I have lived with this woman most of my life. She had never said anything like this. And by the way, I come by my non-religion, truthfully, because she has no belief in afterlife. When you're dead, you're dead. And so it blew my mind when she casually said, well, I've had this out-of-body experience. I said, what do you mean? Explain this. So my mom, when she was first married, she and my father moved to a rural town in Georgia, and he was coaching basketball and she was teaching school, and she was driving home from school one day and got in a single car accident where she was thrown out of the car, and a car full of high school kids came along, found her and said, oh, we got to get, you know, Coach Harbin's wife to the hospital. They picked her up, took her to the hospital. And she had emergency surgery to remove her spleen because she had internal bleeding. Mm. So apparently she awoke, and I'm going to put air quotes that your audience can't see around awoke, in the recovery room. But she awoke to find herself floating above the bed. She sees herself there. She sees the two nurses sitting beside, and one nurse is saying to the other, you know, it doesn't look very good. So she had this legit out-of-body experience. Now, obviously, she survived, but it blew my mind, one, that she had this. But it did not affect her profoundly enough to force her or edge her into that spiritual or religious. I mean, she's more matter-of-fact than I am about it's all based in science. But also, it did not affect her enough to then be telling anybody, including her children, about this experience. I mean, I'm talking, we're a year or two in of me talking about my experiences, Will, before she finally brought this up. It was mind-boggling. Mm,
yeah, I can only imagine. I think I would have had some more trite words than you had just now. But so it's interesting because you hear that story about people who have near-death experiences, waking up above their body, looking down at their bodies, shortly hearing the nurses or the doctors in the room saying something about how it's not looking good, but shortly before the tunnel opens up and they start kind of heading their way.
Yep.
So I don't know, obviously, because I'm asking all these questions, but I don't know if it's the same thing or if it's two separate incidences. Maybe an out-of-the-body experience, what you experience is different. Maybe what she experienced was actually an NDE or near-death experience, whereas yours is more of an astral travel. I don't know. All I know is that these stories really energize me. I think it's so exciting to know, obviously, between my conversations with April and my conversation with you, it's showing me that there's more and more stories that showcase that the consciousness does not live in our bodies, but rather elsewhere. Where that is, I have no idea. But I've spent really my entire life worried about, from a very early age, death. The thought of death to me was awful. When my grandmother passed away at a very young age of lung cancer, I couldn't understand it. All I knew was she was gone. And the thought, when I was 6 years old, 7 years old, the thought that my grandmother was no longer here, that she was, it just never, didn't exist anymore, scared the living Jesus out of me. So these kinds of stories that help me to put things into perspective are big help. And it's one of the things that April mentioned, that they do a lot of work with helping people kind of get over that fear of death. Because when you put two and two together and you realize that your consciousness cannot live in your body because of all of these different things, and you couple that with the scientific fact that energy cannot be destroyed, it can only be transformed, I can't, as much of a skeptic as I am, I can't help but come to certain conclusions. What I'm looking for is, I want the buzzing that you're experiencing. I want to feel it. I want to touch it. I want to say yes. I want to look at your Great Dane in the face and go, ha, you can't tell that I'm here, right? I want to feel, I want to experience these things. And I just, maybe because I'm trying so hard, it's not happening for me. Your story strikes me in as much that you, from my understanding, you weren't really trying at all when it first started happening to you.
No. And I think that is, it just is from luck. So it's not anything special. It just happens to be luck.
I know that you say that. And I said the same thing. What if it's not? What if it's just the fact that you are a little bit more awakened than the rest of us? I mean, I meditate every day. This past year, I've seen an incredible evolution of my personality over the last year. Obviously, we've all had a lot more time in our hands, right, to do things, but it goes so far beyond it. Experiences that we've had over the past year, personal evolutions, being forced to face different things about ourselves. So it's forced a lot of us to be more awakened. But some of us intrinsically have that happen to them without external forces forcing that. And I kind of think that might be what might have been happening with you.
You know, we all have to spend a lot of time thinking about ourselves, our mental health during the past year, simply because of the shutdown. We've had a lot of time to do so. And, you know, there are a lot of ugly things in our country right now, social issues, political issues that have really brought out a lot of ugliness. And part of what I struggle with is, you know, how can some people be so good and others appear to be just pure evil? And how can we all be on this earth and have similar experiences yet arrive at such seemingly different points of view and differing actions? And for me, I don't know. See, I don't like the word awakening, but I do like the word learning. And I actually am a fan of reincarnation, the idea of reincarnation, because that actually makes sense to me. And it was based on something that Bob Monroe said, that he said he believed that our experiences here on Earth was kind of like a school, that we are here to go through the human experience to kind of learn. And it might take one lifetime or it might take hundreds of lifetimes. And so that kind of made sense to me, that that could explain good and evil. Those whose actions seem to be for the greater good probably have learned a little bit more, you know, how things go wrong when evil actions happen. And it was a good explanation for me, or at least for me, to make sense of this crazy time by thinking that, you know, those who are evil in the world just haven't yet had that experience to learn. It's going to take them a few more lifetimes. So that kind of translates into this whole idea of awakened, the idea that, you know, I'm now at a point where when I experience things, whether they're really great or they're really bad, like the passing of my brother, I can kind of make sense of it, that this is just an experience. It's just a learning experience I'm needing to go through.
And here I go again, mentioning my favorite book, Conversations with God, when he talks about the fact that there is no evil. There is no evil. There's just actions and consequences. And just because someone does something that they feel is right for them doesn't mean that it's right for you. And that's
exactly as it's supposed to be. Because if we did all start from the one and we all are just here to experience everything that we are so that we then can know what we are not, that all makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly exciting when you think of it that way. And I'm on board with let's make that be our reality. And in speaking with April last week, she mentioned that in her estimations, what people see when they're passing is what the universe or God or the spirit or whatever feels would be the best transition for you.
Have you ever read the Tibetan Book of the Dead, Will?
No, but it's on my list to read it.
You know, it's a fascinating read because it talks about what happens to the body when you die. You know, which senses you lose first, smell, taste, and that hearing is one of the last senses to go. But the idea behind meditation for that is similar to when I'm meditating, trying to bring on the vibrations, the intense buzzing vibrations. The idea is you get so trained with your meditating that even when you die, you won't lose consciousness.
That's terrifying.
No, that's it's not.
That's a terrifying thought. If you're being eaten by a shark and suddenly you're still not.
Well, remember I told you, I said, I'm not scared of death. Just I don't want pain and suffering when I die, the form of death.
Right.
But the idea of being in control of my consciousness, going through that process, and then being able to control where it goes after, I do like that idea very much.
You've seen the movie, I'm sure, What Dreams May Come.
Yeah.
So that's based off of a Richard Matheson book. Richard Matheson is one of my all-time favorite authors, and he's responsible for writing most of the original Twilight Zone episodes. The man was amazing. Well, he wrote this story about what there was after death. And it's beautiful and heartbreaking all at the same time. And it makes so much sense that if whatever we think is waiting for us, I mean, in this life, everyone talks about manifestation, right? And thoughts have power. And whatever you think about strongly enough will come to pass. We are all creating our own reality. And what is going on in the world is based on group decisions. As a group thinks of something, that's what makes things come to pass. Why would it not be the same once we cross?
Yeah, no, that's a very Buddhist idea of actually the creation of the earth is that, you know, we imagined it.
Right. So, and there's all these thoughts about possibly this being a simulation. Maybe we're all just avatars and we're just plugged in somewhere on a computer and we're just going through a simulation.
You know, Thomas Campbell actually is a huge fan of that. The fact that this is our learning ground and our consciousness is put in this body and we have to have certain parameters. For example, you know, this computer being solid and me not being able to walk through walls, that we have to have certain parameters in order to believe it's real in order to then go through our simulated learning. That actually makes sense to me. You know, science, there's all these science articles coming out now, just in the last few months, that they don't believe consciousness starts in the brain, that it arrives from elsewhere. And so that's right up my alley when it's science saying these things versus, you know, a spiritual teacher. I'm much more apt to believe it and make sense of it, but it really aligns with the experiences that I'm having.
Wow. I think that you and I could kill a bottle of wine easily talking about these things for hours on end. You have given us a lot to think about. If there's one thing that you would want to make sure that our listeners leave with, what would you like that to be?
I guess, you know, the one thing I would want listeners to take away from this is that, you know, I mean, it's fine if you don't believe if you think I was just dreaming, that it was a very real dream that I had when I traveled out my body. I mean, that's fine. But the thing that I would like them to take away is do the research, Google some of this stuff and read the scientific articles that are coming about consciousness not developing in the body, that being from elsewhere. Google some of the Gateway Project, read about it and realize that there are scientific and government industries saying, yeah, this is real. This is happening. And then I would really encourage you to practice for yourself, because I mean, if I could do it, probably anybody could, but
I don't know about that because I've been trying for a long time.
And then take comfort in the fact that if you're religious, more power to you. I hope you pray for me as well as you will. You know, I never begrudge anybody being religious. I love those people that cling to the things that provide them comfort and that make sense to them. It just never made sense for me. So find the thing that does make sense for you. Find the thing that does bring you that inner peace to where you can maybe up those hurts to where you do feel those vibrations and that blissful feeling.
It's very well said. I would follow up by saying Wayne Dyer, one of his 10 spiritual laws or 10 laws of inner peace, talks about being open to everything and discount nothing. If at the very least, I would think that people who are listening to the show are at the very least open to the possibility of things like this being real. I, like you, am not religious at all. I'm spiritual to a certain extent. I'm pragmatic. I'm scientific. But more and more, I'm finding, when I mentioned Conversations with God, if you've not read the book, it's not at all a religious tome. I resisted reading it for years because I don't respond well to organized religion. It's just not my thing. If like to your point, like you said, if it's your thing, excellent. You found your path. That's fantastic. It's not been mine traditionally. So when I finally picked up the book and started reading it, I realized, holy smokes. Well, my first thought was I've wasted so much time, but the new will would say I wasn't ready for it yet. You pick it up when you're ready. When you're ready for the message, you pick it up. So, and I know a lot of people that are listening are probably sick and tired of me referencing that book, but it's my Bible, for lack of a better word, because it is a transformative work for me. I've just picked up the second book. I've had the first book for decades. Just now received the second book. I'm a third of the fourth chapter in, and I'm finding no way would I have been ready for that book until now. So it everything happens at the exact time that it does. But a long way to say thank you for coming on the show and talking about your truth, because at the end of the day, this is your truth. It may not be mine. It may not be someone else's truth, but I salute you for coming on and speaking your truth in spite of the nervousness or the worry that people out there might think, you know, they're going to be sending the white coats your way. I'm thrilled that you are experiencing what you're experiencing. I'm really, really thrilled that you're feeling that feeling of bliss, because that's something that we're all looking for. Don't find your way to looking at it as a negative, because that gift that you're receiving from wherever, from your own higher self or whatever, that's a gift a lot of us out there are actively seeking. And you have it, and it is a wonderful gift. I thank you for sharing that with us, because it took a lot of courage, and I know that I did. So thank you.
Thank you for having me on, Will. And you know, I really love this whole series that you are doing. I think I messaged you the first time I heard one of your podcasts. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, because I've been researching. I've been looking for, like I said, my people. Mm-hmm. And I've been in a lot of different Facebook groups, a lot of different Reddit discussions, and was not finding them. And you have given me an avenue to find and connect with some greater like people who are having similar experiences, even if we are approaching them through different lenses. Yeah. So I appreciate that. So love this series.
Thank you. Thank you for that. It's been a labor of love for me. And that's the one thing that has touched me the most, is that everybody that I've interviewed, yeah, everybody, I'm trying to think back if there's anyone who didn't fit into this category, but it's not. Everybody that I've interviewed has proven themselves to be, to your point, my people. Right? Where I live, there's not a lot of us out here. I know where you live, there's probably more opportunities, but still, everyone knows of, you know, Florida Man is a crazy person down there. And you're right. I encourage you and anyone who's listening to reach out to the people I've spoken to, because those are our people. And there are more of us out there than people give credit for. And I give April, I've spoken about her a lot on the show, but it's very fresh in my mind when I brought up the fact that the world is in such a dire state, and how could we possibly be experiencing this grand awakening that everyone that I'm interviewing is telling me we're undergoing. It just took her very gently reminding me that it's all in how you perceive it. We're being bombarded by the media, who is out for ratings. And the fact is that if you just stop and look around, you'll notice that there really are a lot more people like us, but like you, who was nervous to come on and share your story. We're not mainstream. We are.
Wait, you know, it's not like I can put a sign out that says, hey, guys, I had an out-of-body experience last night. Who else has had one?
Right.
I mean, that's been part of my frustration is I might have some friends who I actually have similar experiences, but how do I signal to them without then thinking I'm crazy? You know, I mean, there is a fear factor in there because it is such an unusual and unbelievable experience that it is difficult to find my people.
Yep. Absolutely. And if you do reach out to try to find those people, sometimes you run into people that aren't really your people, but they desperately want to be. So that's the scariest part.
Yeah. I found that. I think I relayed that to you in mine, that I went through several different types of groups and I'm like, yeah, they're not my people. They're... Yeah.
Well, I celebrate the fact that we were able to have this conversation. I had no idea that you, to your point, had undergone these experiences, but I'm glad that you did, that you reached out and let me know. So yeah, we'll definitely have a lot more of these conversations because we need to exchange notes and trade stories. Because we are our people. And I knew that from very early on, but I didn't know just how much of our people we are. So I'm excited. So Bess, thank you again for sharing your story with us on today's show.
Oh, well, thank you, Will.
And I want to sincerely thank you, listener, as well. Everyone that's listening to this podcast right now, I know that you have lots of content screaming to get your attention. I'm honored that for whatever reason, you have chosen to listen to this one. Now, if this message has touched you or you feel you know someone who would benefit from hearing this message given to us today, please feel free to share this podcast with them. If you know one person, just share it with one person. You might just change their mind. If you're listening to this today, it's because you were drawn to it for a reason, and I'd very much appreciate it if you'd help others receive the message as well. It's by sharing with each other that we make this world a better place. As always, please don't forget, you can send me a voice message on speakpipe.com/skepticmetaphysician. I would love to hear your thoughts, your comments, your questions, your feedback, anything about the show or my guests. And remember that I love sharing people's stories like I just did with Bess. I would love to share yours. So if you are brave enough to step forward, please feel free to reach out if you'd like to come on the show. You can join me on Facebook at The Skeptic Metaphysician. Links to my social media platforms and SpeakPipe access are all in the show notes as well. Well, that's all for now. Thanks again for listening in. We'll see you again on the next episode of The Skeptic Metaphysician. Until then, take care.